They had to communicate with the man in the house. They used a professional hostage negotiator. They may be fortunate in having one available to them in that locality. That could be a question. We may not have one. When the negotiator had to speak to the man in the house over the police loudspeaker, this attracted a crowd of people, naturally. So, then they made another wise and patient step. They sealed off the neighborhood to protect in case anybody, in case firing was going to break out. This stakeout lasted 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours, that requires a lot of professional police time. That's another question you have to consider. But I was not satisfied when Deputy Chief Locke, after the John Dine shooting, told me that one reason for the very prompt police action in that case had been that San Cruz Police Department does not have the time to go stake out or sneak on somebody from behind. I think when human lives are at stake, whether it's a perpetrator or the public, the time should be taken. In another recent incident in South San Francisco, the police had a man with a crossbow parked in a vehicle that threatened some employees of a facility. They did not approach him from the front, as our police seem wont to do. They went behind the vehicle in the parking lot, and they fired tear gas grenades into the vehicle to force him to surrender, and they were successful. In Watsonville, they were successful too. Not a shot was fired. The man surrendered his gun after 4.5 hours. These patient methods are more professional than those recently used by our Santa Cruz Police Department. I want this board to raise the questions of alternative approaches in a systematic manner. And I am submitting a formal written request. For those of you who are busy, the request is contained in the last paragraph of 2 pages. So if you need to rush there, please do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Sheree Peterson, and I've never spoken in public before, so you'll have to bear with me. I'm a mother of 2 children, and I've lived on Button Street for 13 years, and I witnessed the shooting of Brian Andrus. Before the shooting, my son and his friend were rollerblading across the street, and it was brought to my attention that our neighbor, Brian Andrus, had parked his car on the sidewalk, and I was a little concerned, being that my son was rollerblading. I then noticed police officers arriving on our street. I was a little concerned by watching the officers and how they seemed to be. We get pumped up, getting their leather gloves and pumped up, and I thought, gee, you know, my son's over there, I need to get him home. At that point, his friend's mother arrived to pick him up, so she crossed the street, and I saw my son and his friend on the sidewalk, which is right in front of Brian Andrus's apartment, and I began to yell for him. I watched him come up the grassy hill in front of Brian's apartment and proceed to cross the street to our driveway. Then my attention was brought back down towards Brian's apartment. I saw Brian standing on the sidewalk in front of his apartment. I did not see Brian swinging the bat. I could see the police officer standing 1 to 2 apartments away from Brian. Then I witnessed the police gun down Brian. As Brian fell, the officers continued to shoot at him. I looked over to my driveway and I saw Greg's mother, my daughter, and her friend crawling on their hands and knees towards the back of my home. I ran through my house to greet them as many children were crying and very frightened. I was in shock at what I just saw the police do. And just 30 seconds before all this happened, my son was coming around the very sidewalk from a blind area. And I realize now how lucky I am that he wasn't shot. I later went over to the area where my son was just prior to the shooting and realized that the police officers, at their vantage point, they wouldn't have seen my son. After consoling with my children, I heard my husband drive up. I ran out and advised him that the police had shot Brian. My husband ran over to help Brian and Brian's wife, Lori, and was told to get out of there or he would be arrested. That's what they told him. And so I ran over towards my husband and I noticed that Brian was laying on the ground and that he was gasping for air. His face was turning grayer and grayer and I wanted to help him. But again, as I got nearer, I was told to get out of there. And yellow crime tape was put, and I was told to back off. I noticed the police officers were talking and no one at all was administering any first aid to Brian. And it was clearly, if you looked over, he needed oxygen, running his lungs, and nobody was helping him. It's hard to say how long the ambulance took to get there, but after they arrived, they proceeded to cut Brian's shorts off of him. And as all the neighborhood is watching, he's laying there naked, bleeding, and gasping for air. And that was really uncalled for. Then he was handcuffed. And it was, his arms were put behind his back. And it was pretty clear that Brian, you know, was dying, laying there dying. And, you know, I don't think the handcuffs were necessary.
5 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Again, you hear, you've just been listening to Shari Peterson speaking before the Citizens Police Review Board on April 13th, last Monday. Notice how she was cut off. The words 5 minutes from Gary Yamane cut off the rest of her story in which, and I read what she was going to say, would have talked about such things as how Lori Anderson, she spoke to Lori Anderson by phone after Lori Anderson retreated into her house, locking her doors against the police, how Lori was whispering in fear, telling her she didn't want to go with the police. Again, the story that the Citizens Police Review Board at that point did not want to hear. Let's hear more of the testimony at the Citizens Police Review Board.
Is there somebody else who'd like to address the board?
My name is Linda Andrews. I'm Brian's mother.
This is the mother of the victim, or you might say the individual the police consider to be the criminal, Brian Andrews, shot 4 times, eventually in critical condition at the hospital, recovering now at home, and faced with multiple felonies for assaulting the police.
A few questions that need to be answered. I will be filing a formal complaint, as will my daughter-in-law. I wasn't there, but afterwards, the way my son and my daughter-in-law were treated was really unbelievable. Number one, breaking into my daughter-in-law's apartment, taking her and my 2-year-old granddaughter to the police station for 5.5 hours with no food, no diapers, no answers to her questions, not telling her she had rights, she didn't have to speak. That's really bothersome. A Sergeant Clark, who was down at the hospital, I wasn't notified until I read the paper the next morning and saw the article. Sergeant Clark was supposed to notify the family. He told the hospital personnel he would take care of it because the hospital trauma center takes care of notifying the family. He did not. I talked to him midway through the next day, and he said, oh yes, he knew I was there. I've lived in Capitola 5 years. I've lived in this community over 20. He said, yes, he knew about me at 1 o'clock in the morning, Monday morning, but he was too busy. I had to get a court order to see my son in the hospital. They would not allow us to see him through the window. I took my daughter-in-law up the second day to see him through the window to let him know she was okay, that she was alive, that the baby was alive. And the police officer pulled the curtain across when my son was lying so that we couldn't see him. We were told by hospital personnel, and they have incidents like this there all the time at the trauma center, we were told they'd never seen anything like this. In order for him to heal or to live, he had to know his family was there for him. We were not allowed to touch him, to let him know we loved him, not to know somebody cared for him, that somebody was there, that his family was alive. And I guess what's most disturbing is that there were bullet holes in the apartment. My granddaughter was asleep. She'll be 2 on the 15th of this month. She's not having nightmares. Who knows how long she'll be impacted? It seems to me that whatever happened on that week could have been handled a lot differently and not affected so many people.
Thank you, Mrs. Lucas. Would anybody else like to address the board at this point in time? Okay.
Yes.
Hello, board members. I'm Becky Johnson. I have sent you a complaint about the Button Street shooting, but along with it, I also sent two other complaints about an officer that was involved in the Button Street shooting. Perhaps even an officer that precipitated the Button Street shooting when he forced his way into the door of Andrew's apartment and proceeded to assault Lauren Andrews in front of her husband. This officer is named Dominic Garazio. However, we don't call him by that name. We call him Boots Garazio. Let me explain how he got this nickname. On June 11, 1995, Officer Garazio came right here to City Hall, where there was a protest going on. Protesters who were protesting the city's sleeping ban law. And Officer Garazio proceeded, first he went over to a man named Patrick Ring and kicked him viciously awake. Then he went over to another man named Daniel Hopkins and kicked him as well. He then went over to the third man, a man named Anthony Patanjo, and he kicked him too. He proceeded to take, two of the men had blankets, the third man did not have a blanket. He took away the blankets, the two blankets, and when he took the blanket away from Anthony Patanjo, Anthony pleaded to keep his blanket. He said it was very cold, it was the only blanket he had, and he needed it to keep warm with. And Garazio just laughed at him and wrote him up a ticket under San Cruz's Municipal Code 6.3601B, the blanket ban, which outlaws the use of blanket between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. Patrick Green, who had not gotten up quickly enough, rated another kick from Garazio. These kicks were very vicious. He kicked them in their feet, but there was a lot of malice and viciousness in that. And after that, we started calling him Boots Garazio. I don't know if this is a reasonable practice in the police department to kick homeless people away, but it sounds pretty brutal and should not be tolerated, certainly not by your board. The other incident that I filed a complaint on also involved Officer Grazia, and I think it's far more serious. In that instance, on November 4th of 1996, Officer Grazia was involved in an arrest at over by Garfield Park Church on California Avenue. In that instance, he took a homeless man named David Andress, A-N-D-R-E-S-S, different spelling, took him into custody. Then he drove down towards the county jail, and on the way, he rerouted the car to the hospital. David Andress died on route to the hospital, or perhaps shortly after he arrived, it's not clear. Later on, a confidential informant of mine was told that there were three eyewitnesses to this arrest on California Avenue. These three eyewitnesses reported that Officer Grazia kicked and beat this man to death in front of these three eyewitnesses. Now, I called up and I talked to the Sanford County coroner, and included in the complaint that I filed with this board is the exact wording from that coroner's report, where they reported that the man had numerous contusions about his head, where he had thrown himself at the ground and beat his own head on a brick planter. Three witnesses also said that pepper spray was used repeatedly on David Andress. However, there was no mention of it in the coroner's report. So then we have a third incident involving Officer Grazia, where he apparently has forced his way into an apartment and assaulted a woman, enraging her husband, causing him to rush forward to defend his wife, his child, and his family. When are you going to hold these officers accountable? When are you going to hold any of these police department misconduct deeds, hold them accountable? We're still waiting.
And that was Becky Johnson speaking before the Citizens Police Review Board on April 13th, Monday, in the case of the shooting of Brian Andress. She was cut off by the Citizens Police Review Board before she could finish her statement.
My name is Jacqueline Kelly. I have a 13-year-old daughter. Does not sleep well at night, who is afraid she is going to get shot. She has not slept in her bed. She has to be sleeping in her room. It's ruining my family, my marriage. If there's got to be other ways here. I was born in this town. I know exactly what goes on. I know everyone. I know that the police department does not have to do this. They don't have to leave our families with the garbage. They don't have to leave our families with the psychiatric bills, the medicine bills. There has got to be other ways. You guys have got to do your jobs. This is what you're here for. You're here to protect us people. We have no place else to go. Do you think that they're going to listen to us if we go to the police department? I don't think so. These people here have tried numerous times. They're not down here for fun. They have other things to do, but they're here to help us people. You people don't see into our homes. You don't see how our people, our children are frightened. It's pathetic. You can't tell me, do you folks think that our police department is trained well? I mean, yes, I'm not against them doing their jobs. But they've been trained in many different places and don't know how to react? Have they become so desensitized?
and so scared. There was a man over here in White Oak that had a baseball bat and was brought in, I think, by two officers. They didn't shoot him. Our children are suffering here. Like they said, you folks go home at night, the police go home at night, and they live their lives. We also live ours. But it's also a tragedy that we have to go through this and that we have to watch our children like this. There has got to be other ways. They've got to be trained different. They've got to think, what if it was my child out there? Yes, I understand that the man had priors. There have been other ways, like this man said here, that they have handled other cases. Maybe the police all should be gotten together in a group and retrained on how to handle these situations. And maybe you folks can go home and think about it. If it was your children, you would feel the same way. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keller. Robert?
Chairman Rhodes. Members of the Citizens Police Review Board, members of the audience. 2 months ago, this board buried the Happy John Dine investigation. It stopped an early investigation and started public offers from city council members to facilitate such an inquiry. When witnesses' memories were fresh and public concern was aroused, as you can see it is now in this case, you chose to delay and stonewall and let police department call the tune. The Brown Act provides for circumstances where the board can convene emergency or special meetings to deal with issues that are still clear in the minds of witnesses. Your chair and your board made no attempt whatsoever to do that, as apparently they're not doing in this case either. Instead, you let witnesses' memories fade, some leave the area and drag out the process in a fashion that derailed and dispersed public indignation. This was badly done. When we got around to considering the complaints a month and a half after the slaying, it was time to hold open and public hearings. In spite of strong public interest in a shooting involving much contradictory testimony, your board did not even take a formal vote on the issue of a public hearing. In other words, though you clearly and explicitly had and have the power under city ordinance, you refused. You refused to subpoena critically divergent witnesses to ask the questions that the police and the DA failed or chose not to address. This is not a case of the board not having the power, as some members have whined over the years. It is a case of not having the will. While this board was neutered from the start in some respects, no independent investigatory staff, no disciplinary powers, it has long had and yet never used the power to ask questions of witnesses, whether they be police officers or complainants. Instead, they've chosen to let the police department take care of these uncomfortable duties. Last meeting, you narrowly voted to keep the cops out of your closed meetings. Why worry about that at all? Why worry about whether you have an internal affairs officer actually inside your deliberations or in the hallway nearby? If it's going to be the police department you will turn to every time the going gets tough. Was it true that Happy John Dine had been harassed repeatedly downtown, specifically by Officer Over, as Happy's friends claim? You asked no questions. Was it true that Over knew that Happy had played with toy guns? You asked no questions. Was it true that Ben Newman, self-described as Connor Carey's longtime friend, had improperly threatened Dine by demanding he avoid the entire block on which the catalyst sits? You asked no questions. Were there any witnesses other than Newman who saw the initial brandishing incident? The police found none. You sought none. Was Dine warned before he was shot? Only Ben Newman says so. You could have questioned the other witnesses. Could it be you did not understand that public hearings would inevitably have brought out more information? Or are we dealing with a case of terminal timidity? Board Chair Lisa Rose apparently had the misunderstanding that an independent investigator would simply have looked over the information you had in the police and DA's reports. Not so. The investigator could have helped you ask important and obvious questions in public hearings. Questions that at the very least would have given the community open access to your closed process. You've chosen to adopt a closed deliberation process that denies the public any understanding of why you reach the conclusions you do. It may be that state law, under pressure from special interest police lobbies, shrouds police personnel files in darkness. But this does not prevent you from public deliberations or letting the public know clearly why and how you come to the conclusions you do. Those rules are enshrined in your own regulations that have nothing to do with state law.
This board chooses to keep its decisions confidential. That is a choice your board apparently made some years ago, a choice that now denies the public the answers to important questions in the Dine case. I'm using the Dine case as a metaphor here as well, and I'm hoping later to discuss the Andrus case when you come up, that item appears on the agenda later. It became obvious that Police Chief Belcher's account of events ran afoul of every single non-police connected eyewitness in the Dine case. These witnesses dismissed the Newman over Belcher story. 10 witnesses saw nothing in Dine's hand. Nothing pointed at the police, no combat stance. Since many of their accounts were made glaringly public in the DA's report in the library, our police chief's initial account was completely discredited. Your board shifted course, told us another story, the Carey story, that Dine reached into his waistband or front right pocket, began the motion of removing what appeared to be a handgun from his waist area. Based on that story, uncorroborated even by his friend Luna and Over, and certainly by no other witnesses, the board found the officer's statements believable in the excessive force complaint. Though your conclusion was grossly at variance with Police Chief Belcher's, you found no misconduct by the police chief, though several of the complaints specifically named him. Many of us were more concerned that a police chief could publicly put out false statements, openly contradicting your own January 13th findings, and yet suffer neither reprimand nor comment.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time, and thank you for giving this time to the people to speak.
And I, too, was cut off by the five-minute limit. We're about to be cut off here on the air. We have about 10 more minutes of Bathrop Spears' broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're listening to the Citizens Police Review Board. That's the fig leaf that the police department has, and the city council has, actually, that supposedly looks over the shoulders of the police department and reviews their reports. They've never actually investigated anything. They've chosen not to. Why investigate when you can avoid it, I suppose? Or let's put it this way, why not just trust your local police? This is a subject which really has a lot more dimension to it, and I'm going to be talking more about it on my Sunday show, when I'll be returning at 11 o'clock Sunday morning here on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. In the interim, the phone lines are open. If any of you out there have any thoughts on the subject, the phone line is 423-5361. I encourage you to give a call. And let's see what the public has to say about this. And while I'm waiting for you folks to give a call, here's the speech that I would have given at City Council on the issue of the Police Review Board, but actually didn't have time to give. I gave a much shortened version. So, for all you lucky listeners, here's the full version. City Council and its Police Review Board, when will they act? In late January, City Council washed its hands of the John Dine slang and blessed Police Chief Belcher's all-is-well conclusions. As the district attorney's investigation amply documents, however, every non-police-connected witness contradicted Chief Belcher's Dine-pointed-a-weapon-in-a-combat-stance story. City Council's own Citizens Police Review Board, the CPRB, dismissed the Belcher version itself and came up with its own reaching for a weapon conclusion. Yet neither the council nor its CPRB dared to challenge Chief Belcher to explain how you could both reach for and point a weapon at the same time. Neither council nor its board had any criticism for the chief and his quick-triggered crew. Repeated attempts to raise this issue with the board simply produced weary looks of exasperation, defensive annoyance, and eventually threats of arrest. When ordinary citizens do what Officer Martin Over did in the Dine case, it's called making a false report. When officials in less lofty, less well-armed organizations do what Belcher did in the Dine case, it's called issuing false statements to the press. Yet Belcher and his PR point person, Sentinel writer Karen Clark, still hold to the demonstrably discredited pointing a weapon story denied by every non-police witness in the Dine case. Are we surprised, then, that barely 4 months later, police have gunned down another man, Brian Andrus, of Button Street? Here, eyewitnesses tell us, four fully grown male police officers armed with riot batons and pepper spray in an area semicircled with children responded to two non-emergency calls, didn't stop to negotiate, refused to believe Andrus's wife at the front door, broke into her house, and shot Brian Andrus down after he responded to Officer Gerazio's assault on his wife with a bat in his hand. It might also be added that a number of witnesses claim that he fell on the first shot and they continued shooting. Unlike Dine, Andrus didn't die, in spite of truly disgraceful medical mistreatment, both at the scene of the shooting and later in police custody. Unlike Dine, Andrus wasn't dirt poor. He has relatives who bailed him out of jail where Danner's judges had kicked up the bail to $100,000, then winked at Danner's refusal to provide police reports and tapes to Andrus's lawyer for a month through four separate court proceedings. Danner, of course, is our district attorney. Hopefully, Andrus or his wife or the parents of the endangered children in that community will have the resources to sue, since the clink of cash seems to be the only sound that interests the Rotkin Matthews Council, whether it's auctioning off the beach flats to the Seaside Company or selling out the homeless garden project to make way for million-dollar mansions. The sound of gunfire, it appears, doesn't seem to faze them at all. Last time when Connor Carey gunned down Happy John Dine and Police Chief Belcher exonerated him 15 hours later, we heard nothing but the squeak of hand-wringing from this city council. We heard nothing about examining firearms policy, looking into discriminatory conduct against